Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. My name is Marty Plum, and I am your host of a Pen and a Napkin Podcast, a weekly coaching clinic you can carry around with you in your pocket. Welcome back to our interview series, episode number 241. I've had a lot of legends on here. I've had a lot of men and women who just dwell in an atmosphere that the average human being cannot fathom to be in. And then there's Nick LaGalbo out of Lane Tech High School in Chicago, Illinois, USA Basketball. Really excited to have Coach Nick on here in tonight, and we're going to have a good time. We got something special here. It is unique to anything I have ever done before, and I cannot begin to tell you how excited I am to do it. And I know that Nick is as excited as I am, but before we do that, we want to thank our founding sponsor, Kosak Chiropractic, located at 144th and Maple here in Omaha. Coaches, if you or any of your athletes are struggling with balance, neck, or spinal issues, have them go check out Kosak Chiropractic. You can check out their practice at kosakchiro.com. Follow us on Twitter at a pen and a napkin. We try to put out daily coaching tidbits on the Twitter handle, so be sure to follow us there. Again, that's at a pen and a napkin. If you're listening, download, rate, review, give us 5 stars. Say good things about a pen and a napkin so that we can move up in the rankings. And if you have any questions, comments, suggestions, or ideas, email me, apenandanapkin@gmail.com. First and most important question I have for you tonight, Coach LaGalbo.
Let's get it.
Can you hear Pearl Jam from your house right now?
Unfortunately, no. Yeah, they're about Wrigley's about 2 miles west of my home, so that's a little. And obviously, it's Chicago and the busy streets, it's not echoing too much there. So, yeah.
So I thought Wrigley's 2 miles west of you.
I'm sorry. No, yeah, we're 2 miles west of Wrigley.
You're two miles west of Wrigley. Okay, yeah, okay. Because when you told me that this summer, that's what I just envisioned. But if you were 2 miles east, you'd almost be in the lake then.
We would be in the lake. Yeah, you're right. I live in a van down by the river.
Eating government cheese.
Oh, that's a good start right there.
Yes. All right. So Nick and I met each other at Snow Valley this summer, and kind of like Tony Viss, I think I just have this ability to draw like-minded individuals into my dumb world. Like, we didn't talk to each other for like 24 hours, and then we ended up sitting next to each other at lunch or something, and the next thing you know, I think we were trading life stories and everything like that, and we just had an instant connection, and we've just been texting each other back and forth ever since then and everything. So, Nick, I'm really excited to have you on here, man. I hope you're excited.
Oh, I'm so pumped, and you're spot on, man. It's one of the great things about Snow Valley and then like-minded people, and that lunch was awesome. I don't think I laughed so hard in a long time. So, yeah.
Well, we'll see if we can match that here over the next hour or so. I don't know how much basketball folks are going to get out of this, but I've been geeked up about this for about a week or so. So, Coach LaGalbo, for folks that don't know about you, about your basketball journey, let's start this the way that we usually do. Tell us a little bit about yourself and you know, kind of your journey in the game of basketball.
Yeah. So, born and raised in inner city Chicago, best city in the world. I'm a little biased, but I believe it. Grew up playing, you know, in the streets of Chicago and the parks, just like a lot of people my age, you know, wasn't as structured as it is now. So playing pickup out of the parks was a big deal, and kind of earning your keep and trying to win and stay on the court. It's a big part of my childhood. I had an older cousin who played a lot, and that was kind of how I spent most of my days. Kind of sound like I was starting the Will Smith Fresh Prince of Bel-Air song there, but yeah. So continuing on, went to the same grade school as Coach K, St. Helens, right here in Chicago.
Cool, yeah.
And I think at an early age, just kind of realized, hey, this guy's, you know, 91, 92, winning back-to-back national titles, coach of the dream team. And I was about 10 years old, and I'm like, man, you know, this guy kind of graced the same hallways, and started really trying to study him a little bit. And basketball is a very big part of my life. Went to Lane Tech. We weren't very good when I played there, but it was still basketball, and we're one of the biggest schools in the state. So got to play some good teams, some good folks while I was there. Played some D3 ball, and then ended up right back at Lane, kind of in a roundabout way, and been coaching there ever since. This is my 20th year at Lane, and loving every second of it. Wow. So,
and you told me that your high school, you have like 4,400 kids at your school?
This year's enrollment is 4,650, so we're up to 4,000. Yeah, it's a huge school, man. Yeah.
So my hometown is a shade over 5,000 people.
Wow.
You know, so... Yeah. So your high school, you're walking around in a building that holds the same amount of people that I grew up around in the entire town. So,
you know what's funny? Like I first day of school every year, we always talk about, you know, how'd your summer go? And, yeah. And I talk about, you know, I drive up to Snow Valley pretty much every year and drive through some towns that are smaller than our high school. Mm-hmm. And, you know, obviously you live in the inner city of Chicago. You don't really understand that, or, you know, high school students are, you know what you know, and they're kind of blown away. But it's a pretty unique experience. It doesn't mean that they're all basketball players, though. We're a very high academic school. You got a test to get in. Mm-hmm. So it's a really cool, unique space, and just people from all walks of life all over the city of Chicago. And you know, we're starting to play some pretty good basketball, too, so that's exciting.
Yeah, that's what you were saying this summer. Like, you have no idea who you're going to be coaching in high school, basically, until they get there, because – you do have those high academic standards at your school, right?
Yeah, so like about 12,000 kids will take the selective enrollment test to try to get into our school. And it's like, you know, just like anything, we run youth camps. We pumped out almost, you know, between 300 and 400 kids in our youth camps. We have, you know, these young players that want to be a part of our program and that want to compete for us. And then, you know, we can't promise them anything. We can't say, oh, like, and try to build a true feeder, because we don't know if they're going to be in. So for us, skill development is so paramount, getting them in and trying to get them hooked into our culture right away. So yeah, I mean, it's a pretty unique situation, but we really enjoy it. You know, we don't really get transfers. We don't really typically lose transfers, even though we lost one this summer, but
yeah,
I kind of enjoy that. You know, we're not in the rat race with all these transfers and chase. Like, we obviously want top talent, but, like, we want kids that want to be here who get it. So,
yeah. For better, it's a little bit of a peace of mind for you, Nick, I would think, then, you know, for better or worse, here's our freshman class. Let's make the most out of it. Here's our sophomore class. Let's make the most out of it. And you're not, like you said, you're not playing that rat race game, right?
Yeah, and you know what? For a while, it bothered me. But then I think, you know, we were at Snow Valley and that coach's clinic at night. And, you know, I remember Jamie Smith said something. It's like, you can have all the excuses in the world, but, like, why you don't really, you could find a solution for every problem. You just got to stay with it long enough. And I've kind of gotten to a point where that used to bother me. Mm-hmm. But now it's like, you know what? I see some of these coaches pull their hair out about everyone. Like, listen, we get our guys, we coach them up, we pour into them, we make it a special experience for them. And at the end of the day, we know we made people better through the game.
Yep.
And that's kind of where, you know, my purpose lies now. And if we can win some basketball games, obviously I'm a very competitive person. We want to win, but I think we kind of understand our priorities, you know, where we're at, and it makes it a lot more enjoyable. So,
mm-hmm. You know, speaking about making the world a better place, or making your players better people through the game of basketball and that type of stuff. You know, one of the things that I really, in the short time that we've known each other, I really admire about you is your work with the community in Chicago. A lot of people can talk the talk, but you've walked the walk. And one of the big things that you've done is to talk about gun violence and you know, Chicago, obviously, especially on the south side of Chicago, just a tremendous amount of gun violence that you're dealing with, and it's something that's near and dear to your heart. Talk a little bit about kind of the stuff that you organized with Joe Kim Noah, Derek Rose, some of the Bulls there with the Chicago Stand Up rallies, and kind of the background of all of that, Nick.
So I think, you know, one thing I've talked about it quite a bit, and one thing I always kind of forget to mention, because I don't know if it's like a blind spot for me or something I try to even like forget about myself. But even I remember being 15 years old and playing pickup, like we talked about earlier, just, you know, at the park by my house. And, you know, grew up with a lot of kids in the neighborhood that, you know, and some of them just kind of, you know, started doing some of these things that, you know, you shouldn't really be doing. They got involved in some, you know, some gang stuff and what have you. But these are still kids I grew up with, and we were just playing some pickup. But I'll never forget, we kind of got caught in the crossfires of a drive-by. Wow. And it was very, intense. I remember just kind of hitting the floor. And then, you know, once it felt like the dust kind of settled, we all just took off running. I dead sprinted home. And I remember going up to my bedroom, like, in a panic. And, like, I didn't say anything to anybody. I was just kind of head in my hands, like, sitting in the pitch black dark. My sister walked in and didn't know I was in the room. She's like, ah, she lost. She's like, what are you doing in here sitting in the dark? And I was like, I didn't really tell anybody at that point. I mean, most importantly, because I didn't want to be told I couldn't go out and play basketball anymore.
Yeah.
But it was traumatizing, you know, and I think I had my guard up a lot more from that point forward. And it's not like, I think a lot of people, when you don't live in Chicago, but you see the numbers and you see the stats, you think like the Wild Wild West, which it's not. Our city is beautiful, right? And the thing is, you know, Joakim Noah said it best. It's like our city, though, is fragmented. And I think there are some systemic and some cyclical things that have caused that. And I just want to be part of the solution wherever I can. So, you know, later, you know, 2014, you know, I think a lot of people know the story now, but my cousin was shot, leaving a party, 18 years old, wasn't looking for any trouble, wasn't the target of any of this violence, but just kind of got caught in the crossfires and was shot through the head and through the spine, you know. And it was it was clearly the most traumatic experience of my life. And being in the hospital that night and deciding if we wanted to, you know, if we don't do surgery, he could pass. He might be a vegetable his whole life if we do the surgery, but do you want to try? And we as a family decided we're going to try. He is paralyzed. You know, they live in Florida now, but he survived. But I just remember being in the hospital for weeks. I took off work and just, how do we turn a negative to a positive? And I think the story I remember very, like, clearly was, like, leaving the hospital while we were making that decision to have surgery. And my team had open gym at 7 a.m., you know, the next morning. And it was a Saturday after the football game the night before. And I was in the same clothes. I saw all the players at the football game. And I left home from the football game and got the call. So I was in the same clothes from the night before. My players had no idea. And I walked in the open gym, and they saw it. And I just broke down, you know, and they all gave me a hug. And I just told them, like, look, you don't know. You know, you got to be mindful of your surroundings. And I just poured in these guys. And then it just hit me in the hospital, like, this is it. Like, I'm a basketball guy. Like, let's use basketball in our community to try to help guide our kids and give them a safe place to play and just let them know there's some adults who care about them. So it turned into some 3-on-3s and some youth clinics. And then it turned into some nonviolence rallies at our high school. And we've had some great people speak. Joakim Noah's organization, Rocky Drop, really his mother, Cecilia Rohde, spoke at our rallies every year and was influential in that. I got involved in his campaign, which was Rock Your Drop Chicago, and there was billboards. I was actually on a billboard in Chicago with his movement, like, and nobody knew who that guy was.
You were on a billboard?
Yeah.
Oh, God, look at that.
They just got a lot of cool, like, people who were about the movement, you know? So I kind of helped them with theirs in a very small way, but they helped, you know, what we were doing at Lane. And Arnie Duncan came to speak. Just a lot of, you know, influential people got involved. And then we started a Coaches United Against Violence committee and did a lot of great things with the youth and brought the police force in and tried to build relationships that way. We had Coach K do a video to speak to all the kids in the city about leadership and their impact in their school community. So just a lot of different things, but it's obviously something that we need a lot more work in. And the work's never done. So,
yep. One of the really cool things I like about following you on Twitter is you every few days or so you have these great quotes. And I mean, a lot of people have great quotes, and I really love yours. And then you sent me your stuff in, and I forgot that we had talked about this at Snow Valley. But in 240 previous interviews, when I asked for influences, not one Roman emperor would had ever been mentioned before. But you mentioned Marcus Aurelius, and we had talked a little bit about Stoicism, and then you had kind of really started studying that the last few years. It kind of, you know, you got the hashtag mental workout on a daily basis. But how is those studies of Stoicism of somebody a historical figure like a Marcus Aurelius? How have you brought that into your basketball philosophy, your basketball program, and made you and your program better?
Yeah, I love that you asked that question because it's so full circle.
I didn't tell you that beforehand because I wanted to catch you a little bit off guard. No more surprises. Yeah. Everything else is straight up.
No. I love it. This is a convo, man. This is just talking shop. But you know what's funny? my wife, right? So she was a preschool teacher forever. She's been in grad school for high school counseling. Long story short, she's doing her internship at Lane Tech, where she went to high school, I went to high school, and now we're driving to work together, and it's great. But, you know, it's interesting. She was talking this morning about, you know, like, hey, I'm trying to, like, just step up and do some extra things at the school. And it's like, you know, one of the things she's talking about is, like, she taught preschool for 15 years, and now she's in a high school setting with seniors. And she's like, you know, is this message to this senior advisory I'm going to go talk to today, like, appropriate? Like, I'm a preschool teacher, and we were just talking about, like, our journeys. And I was like, look, like, being a preschool teacher has informed who you are as an individual right now, and you lead with kindness. So just continue to just be your authentic self. It doesn't matter if it's a preschool or a senior, authenticity matters, right? And I just made the point, like, for all these years, you know, I taught English for 18 years at one of the top academic high schools in the country, right?
Yep.
And I always would think, like, I know I'm really passionate about coaching basketball. And why did I just get it? Now I do have my PE endorsement. Like, in later years, I've kind of moved into that. But I remember for so long, like, why didn't I get my PE endorsement? I don't have to grade all these essays. But it's like, man, me diving into this rich literature and these texts and, like, finding books that I never read a book up until college. Mm-hmm. And now I'm just this avid, you know, reader. Mm-hmm. And it's just finding this contact. And this context to help with what I'm going through as a coach, what I'm going through as a husband, as a father, and just working with people, right? So, like, diving into Ralph Waldo Emerson, diving into Marcus Aurelius, like, man. So, like, for example, I'm reading Ryan Holiday a ton right now. He's really big in the Stoic movement and bringing Marcus Aurelius to contemporary readers, because obviously this is something from thousands of years ago, yeah. Right?
Yep.
But he had talked about, you know, he starts a lot of his newer books with this, talking about Hercules, you know, this fork in the road and taking the road less traveled, or taking the road that you know is going to be hard, right? Mm-hmm. And it talks about the virtue of excellence, and it's arete, right?
Yep.
And that was our word this year. That was our mantra this season. That was on the back of all of our shirts. We literally started with the proverbial fork in the road. When the varsity players made the team, they had to decide, are you going to walk into the locker room and take the hard road to make this journey what it really could be? And like, are we going to realize our full potential as a team, or are you going to take the easy road? You know, and it was like, that was kind of our whole theme this whole season. So I think, you know, in a weird way, like, I think that's made it a very unique experience for me and our program and the way that we do things. We're reading books, we're talking shop, we're having quotes of the day at practice, Coach Showalter, the mind candy.
Yep.
And we're developing the holistic person. It's not just about X's and O's. And I think that makes us a better program. So,
yeah. Well, another thing that it doesn't take long to pick up on with you is your commitment to your family, your commitment to, you know, just life balance. And admittedly, overall, in my 28 years, and, you know, after Carl and I had kids, I kept a pretty good balance. But I know there were times where things got out of whack, and I think that's one of the things that coaches really struggle with, as you well know, Nick. So, so what are some things that you do to keep that work-life balance in the, like, it's just one of those things, you can just see it coming off you, man. Like it's so important. And I really admire you for that. So, you know, so what are some things that you do that?
Well, it means a lot. And again, I think we see, you know, we talked about the just this energy and this attraction. We find people who are like-minded. I mean, I see that with you, and I think that we see that at Snow Valley, and be truth be told, you know, Coach Showalter has been the biggest impact in my life. And that was what I saw in him. And that was our very first conversation before it was basketball, before it was anything. I saw him speak at a coach's clinic in Wisconsin Dells before he was the Coach Showalter we know now.
Coach Show, yeah.
Right. And, you know, his wife Vicky was in the front row with her grandkids when they were younger, you know. And he's like, after I speak here, I'm running right over to the Dells and we're jumping to the water parks. And, you know, it's funny, Marty, I had people in my life when I first started coaching, and I have a lot of good friends right now who are Division I guys and head guys and guys that I met through camps over the years, and that's not, and they are all doing their thing in a great way. But I just remember there were some people in my life telling me that, like, family and basketball didn't mix, and they're like, you know, you're going to be sacrificing something, and I really just didn't like that because I knew that I could find that balance. But you got to find mentors. You got to find people who do it that way. And Coach Sho was that guy for me, you know, and we immediately, that was one of the first things we ever spoke about. But for me, I think I stay grounded. I think self-discipline is very important. You know, Coach Showalter always told me there's always more work to do. And when you get home, you have to put it down. Yeah. And that's so much easier said than done, especially with our cell phones now and everything's right there. And the alert, like today I walked home and I got an email about our basketball tournament and some stuff's going on. And, you know, I responded to it. And after that, I'm like, what am I doing? And I just put it down. I'm like, follow my own advice. But I try to stay very disciplined with that. I make time. I try to get up in the morning before my kids get up. Especially in the summers and the weekends, and, you know, get my reading in, try to exercise a little bit, and, like, get out the work that I know is a priority so it's not taking up that time with them. Mm-hmm. That's one big thing. I wouldn't say I'm a super religious person. I think I'm a pretty spiritual person. I think I try to make sure I have these internal conversations with myself and through my faith, and making sure that I keep the main things the main things, and my family's the main things, right? Mm-hmm. So it's like, you know, I wouldn't want it any other way. I want my kids to look at their dad and be proud of someone who loves what they do, because I want them to have that type of impact on the world themselves. But I don't want them to sacrifice their families in pursuit of their dreams. And I think they now see my wife doing the same thing, went back to school as a mom of three kids, post third baby right out of COVID. Like, that's tough, you know. I mean, kudos to my wife, and I just think we support each other that way. So that's just who I have to be. That's who I want to be, you know.
Coaches, by now you have seen the newest thing coming out of a pen and a napkin, the Opening Tip Substack newsletter. I put an edition out there for free, and hopefully you see what a great investment this is going to be for you as a coach. I'm guessing it probably is, if you watch everything and listen to everything, it's going to take you almost 3 hours to get through everything on the Opening Tip newsletter here. What do we have in there? You've got an original article by myself here. Just thoughts, ideas on different coaching topics. Into the Lab. That's probably my favorite thing, is the Into the Lab. It's me, another coach, and a whiteboard, and we're just drawing stuff up here. Stuff to help you out, to help you become better, and to help your team become better this coming season and beyond. Got another exclusive podcast. You heard the first one, Industriousness from the Wooden Pyramid of Success, and it's me and it's two semi-retired former girls basketball coaches, Matt Kern of York, Nebraska, Nate Wall of David City Aquinas here in Nebraska. And every newsletter, we're going to break down an aspect of Wooden's Pyramid of Success. Bookshelf recommendations from off the bookshelf, X's and O's stuff. I'm dropping in a university video. It's just going to be given to you there. You know, and I really believe in the products that I've put together. It's practical stuff that's going to help make you a better coach. And then we've got the Coach's Corner with links to clips and articles. As you saw, we had our two Olympic coaches, Steve Kerr and Cheryl Reeve. Just really, really good stuff here. And I know it's subscription-based, but goodness gracious sakes alive, as Coach Wooden would say, it is so affordable. $8 a month for two newsletters. That's $4 every newsletter. That's $2 every single week. Or you can get a year-long subscription, $75. That's 24 editions of the newsletter. That's basically $3 a newsletter. That's basically a dollar an hour if it takes you about 3 hours to get through everything that you're getting here. It could not be more affordable. It could not be more positive for you. It's going to help make you a better coach. So subscribe to the Opening Tip newsletter. Folks, you're not going to regret it. You've also had the honor of coaching internationally, representing the United States, especially with a lot of 3-on-3. Double question here. What are some of the things that you've taken from your experiences with the 3-on-3 stuff, and then also coaching internationally that you've brought back to Lane Tech, to your high school program?
Yeah, I mean, the first statement that has to happen there is obviously what an incredible honor. I mean, the honor of a lifetime in terms of what I've gotten to do. Obviously, being a father and a husband, and obviously winning a gold medal with USA Basketball. Like, come on, like that's the dream. That's the greatest dream, you know. And I got to do some 5-on-5 stuff with them as well. Coached the Hoop Summit the past couple of years, which has been unbelievable too. But it's like the point there is that even in our Hoop Summit preparations and in my high school preparations, so the 5-on-5 side, there's always 3-on-3 crossover, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, with the 5-on-5 Hoop Summit, the game this year, coaching with Charmin White, who's a lot of people say is probably the top high school coach, you know, in the country, in the world. Like, the guy's unbelievable.
My guy Charmin, yeah.
Charm's the best. And yeah. It's like, you know, I'm looking at our first practice plans, and we're doing, you know, 3-on-0 and 3-on-3 breakdown of our main actions. And it's mm-hmm. like, man, it's a breath of fresh air because this is exactly what we do at Lane mm-hmm. and exactly what coaching 3-on-3 has kind of informed me. Like, we're doing this anyway. The 3-on-3 game is beautiful because it's like, yo, you can't hide on defense, right? You got to guard your guard. Offensively, everyone's getting touches. You're working on the main actions anyway that are in 5-on-5. And 5-on-5, the same stuff's happening, but you're putting two shooters in the corners or you're spacing them around that primary action. And you're just a couple more guys have to learn how to space and play out of that action. That's what the difference is, right? And obviously, full court pressure and all those variables, right? But with 3-on-3, I think that's the big thing. Like, our preparation in 3-on-3 and 5-on-5 isn't that dissimilar. Our actions, the way we're teaching ball screen coverages, the way we're attacking. Now, I think obviously the huge thing is that with 3-on-3, there's no help side, right? So, like, you've got to pick your poison. Are you going to give up? You're inevitably going to get beat on a roll or a slip. Because if not, and you're tagging, you're giving up a three, and you can't play up threes because in international play especially, anyone trying to beat USA, they know they got to beat twos to beat us, mm-hmm. right? So you think about it, one of the big things is the point per possession, right? So two per ones up to 21 versus threes and twos with an unlimited, I mean, with, you know, 40-minute game or 32-minute game.
Those
are the big ones, I would say.
Yeah, Charmin and I did something together for a pen and a napkin when I was down in Georgia. Earlier this month. But shameless plug, the only way you can see that is by subscribing to the opening tip newsletter from A Pen and a Napkin. And I'm not above shame. I am shameless. So,
hey man, you got to promote this thing. This thing's a big deal. I love it.
Yeah. You're hosting a roundtable. You got some stuff going there with the IBCA, Illinois Basketball Coaches Association. What are some things that you've seen at camps, like in your coaching career, what are some things that stick out? Who are some of your favorite speakers that you've seen? When you go to a clinic, what are you kind of looking for? Like, if you're going to sign up, you know, obviously our time is precious. It's the one thing that we can never get back in this world is our time. So you don't want to waste your time if you're going to do something. So, you know, what are you looking for? What are the things that you like to see in clinics that you attend, Nick?
I love that question. You know, I think early on, it's just like most coaches, when you're young and you're getting into it, you want everything, right? Yeah. You want a database of everything. So I was going to every clinic I could sign up for, you know? And I think you start learning there are types of clinicians. There's the storytellers, there's the knows gurus, there's the experience and the bullet point guys, you know? And I think what I'm finding more and more, like, you know, the X's and O's stuff is great, but I'm getting a lot of that now off Twitter and off social media and off your, you know, of your stuff. Like, I think you can find X's and O's anywhere. And honestly, just watching games, like, I'm X's and O's. I got a napkin down, I got a notebook, whatever it is, and I'm getting stuff that way. For me now, if I'm signing up for a clinic, I really, man, obviously, like, I think about some of the best I've ever seen. Coach Cho is always up there. I've seen George Raveling through some of the USA clinics, and you sit here, like, that's not a clinic. That's just a life. That's a sermon, you know, and you're just there. And I like to be, you know, just like readings, I like to be moved that way and get pushed philosophically to think about big picture things. So when I see stuff like that going on from coaches that I respect, who I think are leading who are coaching the way that I want to coach and leading the life the way that I think it should be led. And that's not any judgment, but those are the type of people I want to see now. Yep. You know, I can get the X's and O's stuff, I think, wherever I could look. That's not how it always was.
Yeah.
You know? So that's the kind of stuff I'm looking for now. You know, I've seen Coach K a million times, but, you know, Coach K stopped doing the Nike circuit stuff. He had to go to his clinic on campus at Duke, and I did that multiple times. But the one regret is I never really got to see John Wooden in person, and that would have been, a big one for me. But anyway, I digress.
No. The ones I really like are the ones that kind of, to a degree, make you feel uncomfortable. You know, so in the sense of, for the longest time, I was, and still in the end of the day, I was a pressure guy. I want to use all 94x50, if possible. Now, if I've, you know, coaching girls for all but 1 year of my career, if I've got two 6'3 post players, we're not going 94 by 50. Obviously, we're going to change it. We're going to match it. But like, I remember going to see Jim Boone. And Jim, oh, man, blew me away, man. And I didn't know anything about him. It was like there were these other speakers that were there, and then Jim Boone. And I'm like, oh, okay, well, you know. He changed my whole – I listened to him for 1 hour. I flipped. Like, okay, I get it. And now we changed some – within that, we had to fit our personnel. But once I went to the basic pack line concepts, it always came back to how are we going to control gaps? How are we going to keep the ball away from the basket? And how are we going to move kids off the line? After I saw Jim Boone speak, he literally changed my entire half-court defensive philosophy in an hour. So thank you, Coach Boone. So.
Well, let me give you one up on the Jim Boone thing. Remember, we saw we saw Coach Smith get his clinch at Snow Valley. So Jim Boone and his son Jimmy Boone were down one summer at Snow Valley, and that was our night. It was them two and Coach Locke, and what you just said. I've never coached pack line in my life. I've never played it. But I'll tell you what, we went back into that next season, and all my coaches were like, Coach, what's going on? We're going to the pack. That's it. And we did. We flipped. And it was, for us, it became kind of a 1 to 2 year thing. And then we weren't very good for a while. We did a lot of zone and stuff like that. Yeah. And now we're back to kind of our baseline sideline stuff, the outer third stuff that I kind of preach. But, like, he is so buttoned up, and every detail connects. And I think when you're from the floor to the ceiling and everything just dials in, you know, it's pretty impressive. And when you see guys who've been doing a long time who are dialed in like that, it's pretty cool.
Yeah, it is. So, are you ready?
Let's do it.
Are you ready for this?
I don't know, man.
Now, I'm going to pre-warn everybody listening to this that for the next 8 to 10 minutes, this could get really stupid really fast. And after 240 of these, if you haven't realized that, then I don't know why you're listening in the first place. So, I'm just forewarning you. I don't know where this is going to end up. I don't care where it ends up. It's my podcast. I can do what I want to do, and that's exactly what we're going to do. So, Nick and I, as we found out in this, like we're talking about this lunch that we had, kind of like in this kind of religious experience type of a thing here. But we found out in this, I mean, it was 45 minutes to an hour. I mean, that's all it was. But I think we might have been separated at birth in some way, shape, or form. We certainly shared definite brain characteristics. And one of those things that we figured out very quickly is we are both huge fans of The Office. Both huge fans of The Office. So a lot of the text messages that we've been sending back and forth to each other are Office-centered. So to have some fun here and to change it up, here's what we're going to do. And I challenge Coach LeGalbo to this. We are going to put together our dream coaching staff based on the characters of The Office. So, if you have a sense of humor, just stay with us. Just don't be a stick in the mud here, because I promise you, you're going to laugh a little bit over the next few minutes. We've got, and I imagine this is not a Fort Calhoun small Nebraska school. This is Lane Tech 4650. We've got the budget to take care of this. So, we have a social media person. We've got a statistician. We're going to hire two managers. We've got a freshman coach. We've got a JV assistant, a JV head coach, and our varsity assistant. That's the way we're going to go. We're going to start at the bottom up, and we're going to start with our social media coordinator. You are my guest, Nick. So I'm going to and if we get the same people, this is not like a draft. Like you get this person, so it's gone. Whatever. Okay. So you tell me first here for social media coordinator. Who did you have for your social media coordinator? Now, also, here's the rules. This is the characters we could use. Anybody that worked at Scranton Office Park, whether it was in the warehouse or in the offices upstairs. Plus, we had Moe's, Jan Levinson, Holly Flax, the Senator. Who else did we have? David Wallace. I think that might have been it.
Yep.
I think that might have been it that we picked there. I should have put in Karen Filippelli.
Yeah.
My fault. In hindsight, I kind of wanted that there, but, you know, that is what it is. So, Who did you have for your social media coordinator for your office basketball staff?
This is the one that flipped really late, because originally I was thinking, like, all right, who's definitely not on the staff? And the first one I thought of was Ryan. I'm like, I can't have him on my staff. The guy's going to completely ruin the program. He's so self-interested. But then I'm like, wait a second, social media director? It's got to be Ryan, right? Like, he's going to take it and run with it. He's creative. He wants to be out there. So I think, I mean, he's got to be the social media guy for me.
We share a brain. I'm thoroughly convinced, because I had Ryan Howard as my social media coordinator as well for the same exact reasons. So,
right guy.
Yeah, yeah. Right guy. Right guy. Fire guy.
Fire guy. I love it. Yeah. That's interesting. But again, my first thought was like, there's no way.
Yeah.
There's no way he's involved. But yep. Then I was like, yep. Gotta be that guy.
And could he do damage? Yeah, but then he's easily replaceable. So
exactly right, yeah. Status. Just change the social media password on it. Yeah, man.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Statistician. I had, and I think this just makes sense because he is the smartest man in the office. It's got to be Oscar Martinez.
Wow. You know, it's funny. I was thinking the same thing, but I made a switch, and here's why. Oscar, I don't necessarily want my statistician taking the stats and the math and force feeding it and making me feel stupid, which Oscar
it would inevitably do.
Exactly right.
Yeah.
So I went, who's going to give me the most matter of fact stats? Who's just going to do her job and just? I think it's Angela. I think it's got to be Angela.
Okay.
You know?
Okay. I see where you're going.
She's leaving.
Yeah.
I'm taking now the staff's kind of going through it. Mm-hmm. You know. You want to get Kevin involved, but I think Kevin would be a nightmare with stats. So,
Nick, we averaged 11 Clevins last game.
Cookie Monster voice. I love it. Yeah, man.
All right. Who did you have for your managers? Now, we got to have two managers that take care of the nitty-gritty dirty work. You know, I'm just saying, who'd you pick for your two managers?
So now, you know, it's perennially at our school, we've had a lot of female managers as our students. We don't typically get a lot of the male students wanting to do that. But I went with the two people who I think are going to be the most, like, caring about the program, not be above any job, and who I think will be the most fun to be around in that setting. So I think Pam is like, the ultimate, like, caretaker, right? Okay. So she's there. She's going to make sure everything's buttoned up, clock's ready, book's ready, whatever. And then I just said, I had to find a way for him to be around our program in some capacity. I don't know if I trust him on the staff. He could be a rebounder. He could be whatever. So I'm throwing Kevin Malone in there as my other manager. That's where I'm going.
Okay.
That's controversial. Okay. I know. Yeah.
I didn't even think about kind of like the caretaker thought. I just thought about guys that will get stuff done.
Sure.
You maybe don't really want to know how it's done. It's just
That's
done.
Good. That's good.
And who is the ultimate example in the office of a guy who you don't really know how it gets done? You don't want to know how he got it done, but it got done.
Don't tell me. I don't want to say. Are you talking about Creed?
Creed Bratton is one of my managers.
I feel like our building would blow up if Creed was a manager. I don't know, man. I feel like basketballs will be sold on eBay. I feel like jerseys will be disappearing.
Oh, I steal stuff all the time.
Yeah, right.
I just do it for fun.
I spun mung beans in my office drawer.
Well, I know he's got good. Now he was a starter on the office basketball team in the warehouse game, and he got good minutes. So
right.
He knows what
You're
he's right. doing. So
thank you. Yeah.
Yeah. I did. I am going to steal one from you. I am going to pick Pam. I'd like to think that Pam would be able to keep Creed in check, kind of like she did when he was the acting regional manager. So I'm going to, if he gets a little too squirrely, she'll give him two identical pictures and tell him to find seven differences.
Oh, man. Just don't let him open his Thoughts with Creed document in front of you, because you'll all be fired.
Have you ever paused the screen?
Yes, yeah. I looked at it.
Motorcycles are a lot like cars, but they have only two wheels.
It's just like, oh my god, it's so well written. That's such a perfect scene. I love it. I love it. Man.
All right. Freshman head coach. Now, here's the way I thought of this. Freshman head coach, you got to be able to turn, because normally freshmen aren't practicing with your JVs and varsity, so it's got to be somebody that you can trust that you're not going to be in the gym with.
Exactly who, right.
Who took care of Dunder Mifflin that was not overlooked or not looked over by the upstairs people? Who is the best warehouse manager that we've ever had? It's Daryl Philbin.
I have him in a different role. He's coming up soon. Yeah. I love that answer. And I actually thought about that too. I think he would be a perfect freshman coach. I have him in another role, and I'll explain my logic. But I think you're going to be blown away by my freshman coach. Because exactly what you said, somebody that's your freshman coach is not always with the varsity and sophomores, but has to upkeep the culture, right, when you're not there, has to have an enthusiasm. You're dealing with the freshmen, right? You have to really love what you do.
I know where you're going here. I know.
Yeah, you have to love what you do. You have to be all about the brand. You have to be all about the culture. You have to all about the program. Michael Gary Scott is my head freshman coach.
Oh!
And secret option, I am going through the booster club. I'm getting a $500 stipend to make the assistant to the freshman coach, Dwight Schrute. Boom.
I thought you were going to get a $500 gift card so Michael could go buy clothes at Burlington Coat Factory.
And that's where we'll go. Dwight will give it to Michael, and they get some ties and some game ready fits for freshman basketball on Saturday mornings. Yep.
With $500, with $500, Dwight could buy 200 dress shirts.
Exactly right. I love it. There you go, Siri.
That's good. Oh, that's good. I thought for sure you were going to say Dwight was going to be the freshman coach. But
I was thinking about that, too. But then it's like he'd be running this dictatorship and doing his own thing, I think. And, like, I don't know. I just feel like it'd get a little crazy. I have a lot of parent emails, for sure.
Plus your team would be dehydrated because they'd be eating beets before the game and get dehydrated.
We wouldn't play a game because everyone think they're like going to kill them because there's juice running down their lip. So, yeah. I love it.
JV assistant coach. Is it my turn to start? I think it is.
Yeah, go for it. Yeah. Yep.
No, wait. I did. I started with Daryl, and you brought in.
Oh, yeah.
You brought in
right.
Okay, so who's your JV assistant coach?
Okay. This is kind of a unique one. Well, because I think it makes more sense when you hear who my head JV coach is, but I know we're going in order.
Okay.
So I've been bouncing around. I think your JV assistant has to be another person who, like I think of all people, obviously we brought Dwight in with a gift card, so he doesn't count, right?
Yeah.
But like, I think your JV assistant coach is the person in the program who literally has to just not care about the spotlight at all. You're there solely to just, hey, I just want to help kids. I just want to find a spot and be involved, right? So I went back and forth a little bit, but wait, hold on. Now I'm getting caught up in my head. Hold on. I had him.
So I literally wrote this down. Like, I had notes. I may or may not have had a spreadsheet. I'm just telling you right now.
All right, so I actually was going off on a tangent. So here's what I did, because I think of all the people in the office, in a very small window, she had this genuine care, and I think she would be a good assistant. She would keep good stats, she would stay organized, and she'd be there for the social and emotional needs of the program, and that's Holly Flax. Secret option. Flax.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right.
And then her and Michael can still debrief about the sophomore freshman, you know, hierarchy there. Yeah. So there's
Holly Flax. How did your team do?
Exactly. And they'll be on the bus rides together when we do the JV freshman games and they go off and do their own thing. So
no PDA, though.
I was just saying, can't make out on the bus. So
I had for my JV assistant, and again, kind of like with your JV assistant, so I get to dovetail my JV assistant because I get JV head coach first.
Good
so
move.
Only one person can truly be the greatest assistant. And that is the assistant to the assistant that is the head coach. And it is Dwight K. Schrute. Because he does. He's going to bring an intensity to things. He's going to bring an organization to things. He's going to bring a focus to things. He's going to be – he's never going to miss a day, you know. He'll, you know, and all those things. But
definitely trick him into the practice being at 11 a.m.
But you can't give him too much power. You got to find a place to keep him in check. So who is the one person in this world, as my JV head coach, who is the one person in the world that can keep Dwight Kurt Schrute in check? It is his wife. It is Angela Martin, and those two will be my JV tandem.
I did not see that coming. Wow. I thought you were going Michael Gary Scott.
No.
But you threw, yeah, I love it. Yeah. I love that. Yeah. Angela will run the show there for sure.
Yes.
I like that.
Yes.
I like that.
Yeah.
Wow.
Who do you got for your JV head coach?
So this is interesting because, you know, in the back, I'm not going to lie to you. I was thinking of, am I going to get David Wallace involved? Because he seems like he's a smart guy. You know,
I struggled. He was not to give away too much, but I struggled with that.
Yeah. But I ultimately decided against it. Right. Yeah. And I knew that ultimately, like there's two more people that I get to choose, right? I have my head sophomore, I have JV, and my
there's your varsity assistant.
My varsity assistant. Yeah. There's two people that have to be involved no matter what, right? And there's, for me, and I'll get to that more, that I think would be, like, we share similar tendencies. I think they're kind of going to be like, you know, your two right-hand men, so to speak, your JV assistant, your head sophomore coach, you got to trust them. So I'm putting Jim Helfert as my head JV coach. And I think when you really think about it, he's got to be someone who's going to perpetuate the program, who's going to make sure players are varsity ready. He's going to do an unbelievable job as a leader in his own right, but he's never going to want to and if he does want to be a head coach one day, kudos to you. We'll have those staff meetings, we'll be on the same page, and I think that's a very important, like, if everyone in your program you got to be on the same page with, I think it's your head JV coach.
Who's your varsity assistant then?
Well, that's where I said he's got to be a part of it. Daryl is my right-hand man on the varsity staff. He's messing it up. He's hitting guys with screens. He's getting in the mix with them. And then he's my right-hand man on the bench. And he can keep the bench in line. When guys are getting out of line, you just have him stand up and they'll sit down, you know. Mm-hmm. So I think that's the staff.
Yeah. I had Jim as my varsity assistant, and it was like, obviously he's the most qualified of anybody. You'd like to clone him and put him in about four different spots, but
yep.
I truly tried to find a place for Michael Gary Scott, but
opening my head of your parent club, your booster club, get him involved.
Well, that's another one we could have added. Who would be the head of your booster club? You know, that type of thing. Yeah. Maybe for next time, Nick. So
there we go.
So, I apologize. We went like 14, 15 minutes on that, but we had fun, and that's the most important thing. So I hope honestly, we did this to have to change it up and to have some fun with it. And I knew Nick would be a great sport to go along with it. So
that took way too much time. I thought about that way too much. So. Love it.
In 1993, Counting Crows referred to Omaha as somewhere in Middle America. More people know Omaha as the home of Warren Buffett, the Union Pacific Railroad, and the College World Series. Athletically, Nebraska is known for its dominance in college and high school football and volleyball, while basketball has perennially been on the back burner. But for one season, in its largest city, basketball was king of the state. In a time of social and political turmoil in our country, three high school boys basketball teams from Omaha, Nebraska were ranked in the top 25 in the country, featuring some of the best talent that one city has ever produced anywhere in the country. Amongst these three teams were nine Division I basketball players, and all 15 starters from these three teams played collegiate athletics at various levels for at least two seasons. Kings of their court, three teams, one city, and the greatest basketball season in Nebraska high school history begins with the chaotic ending of the 2020 state tournament, as the whole world was shutting down due to the COVID-19 virus. Over the span of the next year, these players, coaches, and parents navigated their basketball futures while also, like the rest of the United States and the world, worked through COVID quarantines, the George Floyd murders and riots, the political turmoil of the 2020 presidential campaign, and much more. 1 year later, the destinies of these three teams would intertwine themselves for the final time at the 2021 Nebraska State Basketball Tournament, where the crescendo to this story occurred 365 days after it began, with some of the best high school basketball any state has ever seen. Kings of their court, three teams, one city, and the greatest basketball season in Nebraska high school history is the story of highly driven individuals searching to achieve lifelong dreams and aspirations, both on and off the basketball floor, during a season that almost didn't happen. Kings of their court will be published on October the 1st, Tuesday, October the 1st. Kindle copies are $9.99. Paperback copies are $19.99. Copies are eligible to be pre-ordered today, so be sure to get on Amazon.com and pre-order your copy of Kings of their Court. All right, Nick, let's jump into our John Wooden quote of the day here. From Wooden, a lifetime observations, you know it's coming here. Are you ready, Coach LaGalba, for the John Wooden quote of the day?
Let's hit it.
From page 30. Early on, I came to believe that you should learn as if you were going to live forever, and live as if you were going to die tomorrow. I want to live that life as if I were going to die tomorrow, with relish, immediacy, and the right priorities. I also will not waste even a minute.
I love it.
What do you got for me, boss?
So good. I mean, I reflect on that a lot. You know, just the idea of just, we talked about a little bit earlier tonight, just the idea of being present, mm-hmm. coming home and detaching and not letting things consume you. I think being present with people is so important. I think it's becoming a lost art with social media and phones and technology. But I think truly being in the presence of someone and feeling their energy and being there in the moment is so important. But understanding, I think the big part of that quote is, I mean, at the end of the day, tomorrow's promised to no one. Yep. And living with exuberance for life, living with a passion for what you do, and trying not to have regrets when it's all said and done. But like that idea, right? Like you're going to live forever. There's a million things you're going to do, but you got to almost act like, hey, we're going to die tomorrow. Like you're probably not going to have the time to get it all done. So, you know, Ralph Waldo Emerson says, give me health in a day, I'll make the kings of the world jealous. That's it, man. Like yeah. to give me today and a healthy body, and I'm going to go and eat whatever, you know, yeah. some people are sick. Hey, I'm going to read, I'm going to do whatever I can do, but I'm going to be present and live it to the fullest. So
yeah.
I love
yeah. Yeah, my son and I kind of had this conversation. It's weird. This is like the third time this has come up in like 4 or 5 days. But, you know, I'm as busy and in some ways more busy when I yeah. now that I'm not coaching, you know. And obviously, you know, finishing up the book and doing everything with that. And, you know, that's huge innings eater, you know, right there, you know. But one of the things that I was talking about with him is – you know, I feel really lucky that with this podcasting stuff and whatever, I'm leaving something behind that I hope helps people long yep. after I'm done. And again, my mom died suddenly at the age of 44. I figured out early in life that, you know, life, you know, the next day is not guaranteed. So, you know, it's that fine balance of being active. You want to do so much, but at the same time, you got to enjoy it. You got to sit back. You got to be, like you said, be present with everything. And I think that's such a good thing to do. And you know, like Wooden, you know, Wooden is pretty much right on everything, you know, yeah. and I think he hit it out of the park here again, you know, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, what you just said really just got me thinking a lot. We did something this year with like our alum. We started this thing called The Legacy, about our program, just about like when you're part of a program, like, you know, you want to leave a legacy when you're gone, but like while you're here, be a part of, be the legacy, live the legacy, be the legacy, right? Mm-hmm. But I think that's such an important word, like in a small way with our basketball program, but big picture, just what do you leave behind, you know, when it's all said and done with what you've done with your time. And I think if you're impacting lives and like you said, what you're doing with the pod and with the book and just impacting lives through the game and relationships, like it's such a great thing. And, you know, legacy is such an important word. And I think you hit it out of the park too, man. That was really well said. So
yeah. Every once in a while, blind squirrel finds a nut, you know? So, hey, let's get to some basketball nerd stuff. Let's talk about some of your favorite player development stuff. You know, I know you're big into that. You know, I got to watch him work a little bit at Snow Valley, and you know, just kind of the floor is yours, Nick. Talk about three, four, five of your favorite drill, shooting, passing, ball handling, wherever you want to go. Just, you know, your player development program there at Lane Tech, what you're trying to do with your kids, what you're emphasizing, how you build it there. I'm just going to sit back and relax. If I've got to interrupt you, I'll try to do so as politely as I can. But the floor is yours, my friend. Let it rip.
Yeah, so like we talked about, I think, with us, not knowing who we're going to get, not having a true feeder, player development is paramount. You know, we want our guys at the foundational levels. You know, coming in, obviously, we talk about footwork being the foundation of everything. So really getting comfortable, being uncomfortable with our footwork and mastering box drills, it's such a big part of what we do. Just getting comfortable understanding how, and obviously even through box drills, like you're learning how to size up ball screens and set up your cuts and do all these different things. So that's a really big part of what we do. But I don't want to spend too much time on the nuances, on the foundational stuff, because obviously that's important. Like, we do box drills and line drills and Snow Valley stuff all the time. I don't think there's any, like, magic formula here. I think nothing beats, you know, just mastering your reps and being very deliberate with your repetitions and understanding. I think I try to be very key about, like, our teaching points and being very specific about certain things so our players understand those details. And I think, like, you can go into the gym and be there for an hour and not get anything done.
Yep.
So I just want to make sure that we have a very specific plan when the players come into the gym. Like, right now we can't really train our play. We can't do anything teaching wise, but I feel like our players have enough things that we've taught them in season and in our summer contact period that they could come in and run a workout. We have shooting stuff for them. We have pick and roll stuff for them. We have obviously defensive stuff and one-on-one stuff. But the big thing I'd like to talk about is something I really stole recently. One of my good friends, actually, I'm, you know, shameless plug, but my boy Steve DiAgostino, he's out of Rochester, New York. He's a big skills guy, skills trainer, NBA clients. But he's, you know, he doesn't draw lines in the sand. He's got NBA clients, but he works with kids. He works with anybody. And he's just a nerd about the game like us. And he's been really big, and he's influenced the way I think a lot about our player development stuff. And so much of what he does is steeped in, like, game reps, right? And I know that sounds super obvious, and I think we all say we do it, but I wasn't doing it enough. And, like, he just has, you know, he has these drills where, like, you know, you start and you kind of feed them, you spoon feed them, like, where you're going to be on the floor. And it's like, okay, first we start with disadvantage stuff. You start the defender on the hip, the offensive player has the advantage. You got two other offensive players spaced, you know, maybe it's in the slot in the corner, maybe, and eventually they can start picking their spots, right? But then you got your defense, the help defense, where they'll be, low man, X man, wherever it may be. But, like, his whole thing is, like, the point of offense is find the advantage. Like, that's been our whole, for the past 2 years since I heard him say that, we've stole that. We use that. I mean, it's like our players are like, coach, we get it, you know, like, but that's the purpose of offense, right?
Yeah,
and you find the advantage with paint touches and with reversals, right? So we start a player with the advantage. If you have the advantage, you got to keep the advantage. And you let them just play from that scenario, and you let them learn how to make the reads, right? And that's just off. Now, that's just drive and kick. And then the players are learning how to cut and read the back of the head. We're backdooring. He gets a baseline drive. We're drifting, and we're one mooring, or we're lifting if it's, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. And we're just learning our ball player movement stuff that we've drilled 1-0 or 3-0, but now it's applicable in game reps. But then you just blow them out of the water. Now you say, okay, figure it out. Like, you don't start with the advantage. You've got to create an advantage. Is that through a ball screen? Is that through a pin down? Is that through a get action? Is that through a high post split action? And things that we will teach, like, you've got to go find it, mm-hmm. and you've got to create it, and you've got to play out of it. And you can go 8 minutes, you know, and you're just playing that way. And, like, now that's how we run our varsity tryouts. Mm-hmm. We'll put that in there for 20 minutes and we put guys in different groups. And, like, we want to see them figuring it out and finding advantage, you know. And conversely, as much as it's a great offensive drill, you're seeing your guys that want to guard, right?
Yeah.
So it's been a game changer for us. It's something we do all the time.
That tryout deal, Nick, real quick, sorry to interrupt, but I'm doing it as politely as I can. You know, when you're talking about just – at times, we just got to let guys play, or guys and gals play 3-on-3, 4-on-4, with the, you know, what CLA constrictions. I just emailed Alex today, and I can't remember. It's CLA. I'm just going to leave it at CLA. Alex, I'm sorry. My bad, buddy. you know, you got a kid that might not look great in the shooting drills. You might have a kid that might not look great in the ball handling drills. But, man, you just let him play. And it doesn't have to be like this kid that's got a 42-inch vertical that's throwing it down from his elbow. It's just...
they got a nose for the ball. They know how to read the ball.
People that could just play basketball and play it well. And when you... sometimes we just got to turn it over to them and give those kids a chance to do what they do. Don't you think, Nick?
Oh, I agree 100%. And, you know, taking what you just said and actually going back to one of your previous questions, one of the biggest takeaways for me coaching three-on-threes and being in international waters, and, you know, you don't get to coach your players in the games in three-on-three. People don't understand that. So, like, all of our preparations and practice and our trainings, when they get on the floor, they have to coach themselves. And, like, don't get me wrong, we're screaming from the stands if they can hear us, right? But they don't hear anything you're saying. Like, they have to be prepared, and you have to let them go and trust. They have to, you know, you shrink to the level of your training, right? That's the old Marine prism. And it's like, at the end of the day, that's helped my five-on-five coaching, right? Charm, it's another charmism, the haze in the barn, right? We get to game day, hey, the haze in the barn, do these guys know what they need to do? We've drilled it. And when you get into these drills where it's like they have to figure out and they have to play, you see who can play. Mm-hmm. You know, they might look really great in a drive and kick drill, and then you put them in there and they can't find the shot because they're not doing it when there's a defense, right? Mm-hmm. Conversely, a kid maybe missed five shots, but now, hey, he just got four deflections or four offensive rebounds. He backdoored every time and got layups. Yeah, maybe he's only shooting 30%, but he's got a nose for the ball. There's probably a spot for you. You know what I mean? So I agree with you 100%, man, you know.
When you're coaching 3-on-3, are you like Mr. Miyagi at the All-Valley Karate Championship? You're just kind of standing over there just like...
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I'll tell you this. It's kind of a funny story. So, I can't. You said we got to keep it PG, so I'm not going to give you the whole story. But there's been some really cool photos that have kind of like, you know, materialized of me like in the stands during these 3-on-3 games. You know, and it's like you can't. You're not in the huddle. You can't give them the look. And truthfully, if they look up at where you are and it looks like they're being coached, that could be a violation in FIBA 3-on-3. Okay. So, like, you can't be too demonstrative, you know? Yeah. So, for me, I've gotten better, you know, but there's a great photo. I'm, like, my body language, what I'm, like, it's very clear. I was very upset and saying some things I probably shouldn't have been saying. But I'll tell you what. The last time I coached internationally, I was in China with our U-23s, our U-21s, rather, two summers ago. And, you know, it's funny, some of these coaches, you know, they don't speak English necessarily well when you're talking to them pregame and whatever, but then they're screaming at the refs and they're using very choice English words that, and it's like, wow, so you do know, like, holy cow, you know?
You almost gave me a spit take there. Yeah, no, I could see it. Play it as day. Oh, yeah. So. Coaches, if you are in the Omaha, Council Bluffs, Lincoln metropolitan areas and surrounding areas, it is that time of year again. It is time for the 2024 MBCA Fall Coaches Clinic Series. We're going to start this on Wednesday, September 18th. We're going to go 4 weeks in a row, September 18th, 25th, October the 2nd, and October the 9th. And we have got a great lineup of coaches. Drew Johnson, women's basketball coach at Nebraska Kearney. Marty Levinson, new men's basketball coach at Nebraska Kearney. Tim Sandquist, head men's basketball coach at Kirkwood Community College. Carrie Amy, the new women's basketball coach at the University of South Dakota. Mark Swoboda, from my alma mater, Briarcliff University. Go Chargers, head men's basketball coach there. Coach Swoboda is going to be down. Amy Williams, head women's basketball coach at the University of Nebraska, is going to be one of our guests. We've got a couple more slots to fill. So it is going to be a great series of clinics. It's going to be located at Legends Sports Bar here in Omaha, 72nd and Pacific Street, just east of 72nd Street there. And for those four clinics, $80 is going to cover your clinic fees, the beverages, the food, and the camaraderie, the networking, all of those different things you're going to have at the Metro Basketball Coaches Association Coaches Clinics here this fall series. It's going to be a great run of coaches, so I encourage you, get signed up today. If you want to get signed up, if you want more information, you can send an email to Tom Crable at mbcaomaha@gmail.com, and Tom will get back to you. He'll get you all the information that you need. So, coaches, get signed up for this Falls run of coaches clinics for the Metro Basketball Coaches Association. How are we doing for time, man? You got time for two more topics?
Let's do it. I'm going to keep talking. I have to get my phone charger. I'm bringing the phone with me. I didn't realize my phone was, you know, low on juice, but let's keep going.
All right. Let's talk about unique things within your culture, Nick. What are some things that you do? Again, you're in a little bit different situation where it's this huge school, but it's high academic standards, but you don't know who's going to be in there. You go through the testing and all these other things. So you're building your program, and you're building that culture from when those kids, you know, not all of them, but some of them are, you know, coming in, and you don't have that same, like when I, in my last coaching position here, I was getting to know kids in second and third grade, building that up through the feeder program, that type of thing. So,
right.
So what are some things that you do to kind of build that culture at Lane?
Yeah, you know, I think you start with a question. I could talk about that for way too long, but I'll start with, sorry, I'm bending over to plug this in.
Sorry.
But I'll start with a few things. I think one of the things that's kind of cool about what we're doing at Lane is, you know, I went there, you know, my wife went there. And I think everyone that comes through our program, and even, I mean, all of our kids at school, and it's kind of like I said, my wife, it's her first week, and she's been going to all these advisories, and all the kids are just organically, like, just going up to her, like, wait, you're Coach Legabo's wife, and, like, they're just so welcoming and warm, and my wife's, like, blown away by the kindness there. Mm-hmm. But I think everyone there knows what this means to me, that it's not just a job, that it's I really believe, you know, it's my purpose in life, right, is to serve through the game of basketball. And I'm at the place that helped shape me as a man. And I went through some times in high school where I was a little, you know, I think we all had those times. But, wow, you know, Lane was that safe place for me, and it helped me tremendously. And it's like people understand this is like my mission. Like I really genuinely love what I get to do every day. Mm-hmm. And I think our players feel that. And I think they know that I love them. Mm-hmm. And I think that I'm not scared to say that.
Yep.
You know, I think that, like, young men need to see men in leadership positions being vulnerable and being, I know this might get a little touchy-feely, but no, showing that they care, you know, showing that they care, showing that they care about their craft. I want them to know that I'm working. I think if you challenge someone to do certain work, you have to build that sweat equity. I work out with our guys. I try to get after them and show them that I'm still someone who, you know, who loves this game, and it means a lot to me. But they know that I'm working on my craft. They know that I'm going to clinics. They know that we're bringing the round table to Lane Tech in a couple weeks, you know. And I think that that kind of is the foundation of everything, you know. And then now, you know, Coach K was kind of like the North Star when I started. Coach Showalter's that for me now. But I look at both of them, and they always had their former players on staff, and now we're in this cool spot where a lot of my former players are coaching with me.
I love doing that. Yeah.
Yeah. And like perpetuating the culture and perpetuating the values and the standards that we hang our hats on. And for me, it's like, it can't be lip service. So I think a lot of the things we do with our program, like, it's in writing, right? They get their, you know, we would do hard copy binders. Now it's all like electronically sent to them, and they have it, but they have, you know, it was Coach Bullwinkle, who was at Snow Valley this year, right? We had him come in and do a leadership conference with our program. But I remember, I'll never forget this. He asked me, this was probably 2014 when we brought him into Lane Tech. And he's like, hey, I'm going to come speak to your school. Here's the questions I have for you as the head coach to help inform what I'm going to say to your players. And he asked me what our vision and mission statement was, right? Like, as if we're a business and, you know, organization. And I didn't have one, right? I don't know how many head coaches do, but I never even thought of that. But now, you know, I got it right here. Like, I was fortunate enough to be with Nike last year at the Nike Hoop Summit, and they have these posters with their whole brand right here in a poster, right? Their vision, their mission, their how, their why. So I created that, like, that modus operandi for our program, right? And it's like a living, breathing document that our players read, that they know. Every year we have a new mantra that we try to embody for our journey. And I think, you know, we have our core values, we have our principles. And I think sometimes if you're a new coach coming to our program, this could be like, holy crap, right? But, like, that's the thing. We have so many coaches who have been a part of this that can speak the culture. And I think that that is a really important thing. Like, I think when the players see that this isn't just about basketball, it's bigger than that. And when you're a part of something that's bigger than you, you want to represent it to the highest of standards, mm-hmm. you know? So, yeah. Sorry, I can talk about that.
No, hey, that's why you're on, man. That's why you're on, yeah. You know? You're talking about all those things that you put together, the vision statement, the you know, the core principles, the visions, you know, those core values, that type of stuff. Two questions, follow-ups on that. Do those change year to year? How much of that changes year to year? And how much do you have your players help you write that from year to year? And what's the process that you put that together from year to year?
It's a really good question. So I think just like anything, it's a living document.
Yeah.
I think you have to always, you know, like we talk about, culture is an everyday thing. You fight for culture every
fight
day.
Fight for it's your not, culture every day, Doc Rivers.
Exactly. Yep. Exactly right. And it can't just be a sign on the wall. I know I'm regurgitating all of the same cliches, but it's true, right? And I think sometimes if you just, hey, well, it's in writing, this is what we do, like that's not it, right? Yeah. So you have to constantly evaluate it. And truthfully, like our four C's, like our core principles, have evolved and changed over time, but they've been pretty consistent for the past 10 years. Are like for us, like we talk about, we have like program pillars, we have like character pillars, and they're all on our practice plan at the top, right? And they're and like so for us, like being a really high academic school, like we talk about like the way we're going to play, right? Like we're going to be tougher, we're going to be smarter, right? Mm-hmm. than our competition, and there's like all that stuff has to align too. So like everything from the top down goes together. But now when you get into like, okay, well, how much of that changes? How much of that? We bring in our staff. We show them things. We evaluate, does this stuff still align? Like the vision and the mission, yes, that's not changing, right? Yep. We share it. We make sure guys are bought in. But, like, the way we play might change year to year, obviously, yep. based yep. on our talent. I told you we got a 6'10 kid who's committing very soon, Division I kid, yep. and then we're starting 6'10, 6'8, and 6'7. We've never been that big ever. It's crazy. So the way we're going to play is going to be a little different than last year, you yep. know? So obviously the way we play shifts a little bit, but our vision and mission doesn't. Most of our core values and standards don't change. Our core values don't change, but our standards, right? That's another thing that Coach K did with the Olympic teams.
Yeah.
Like, how are we going to live every year? And like, will, hey, all right, what's important for this team to be successful? And like, all right, yo, maybe last year we had a couple guys walking to practice late too much. We're going to make sure we're 5 minutes early. 5 minutes early is on time, you know, and like we'll get those in writing and make those kind of like our standards for the year and how we're going to live and hold each other accountable,
yeah.
you know.
Yep.
So anyway, yeah.
One of the things that we would do every year is we would write, and a guy by the name of Bruce Brown, he was out of Washington somewhere, and we called it our contract or whatever, our team contract, our team. There was another word for it, though. I can't remember it. This is why you're smarter than me, Nick. This is why I teach history, and you're reading Marcus Aurelius, and I'm, you know, reading Dr. Seuss. So it starts with a C. Anyway, but kids would write it up, and we had like a 3 or 4 step process over a couple of weeks, and it was kind of this gradual thing how we put it together, and then everybody would sign it, and then we'd laminate it and we hang it up in the locker, and on more than one occasion we would have a kid that would make a bad decision, not too often, you know I was really lucky for 28 years most of our kids were really really good kids and had very little discipline issues, but. You know, a couple times when this happened, it was in direct violation. Covenant. There we go. That's
covenant,
the word. Covenant.
I love
yes,
it.
Thank you. Thank
I
you.
Was
covenant.
I was having a hard time listening because I'm trying to figure out this word.
Yeah. Well, I just needed to not think about it for 10 seconds, and then I got
it.
Right. Covenant.
Yeah.
So we had our covenant, and they would do something. And to be honest with you, I didn't have to get – I mean, I was mad. I wasn't happy. But I didn't get mad with the kid. I simply just brought them in. And I said, hey, what happened last night? Or what happened with this? Well, this and this happened. All right, let's take a look at this. Is that essentially something that we said we're not going to do this year? Yes, coach. All right. Find me your signature on this. It's right there, Coach. So you agreed that you weren't going to, you know, you weren't going to do this, and yet this, here we are, and you've admitted that you did this. Yeah. And then at that point, you don't have to get, you know, upset or angry. And it's like, okay, well, here's, this is your repercussion because yep. you gave us our word, your word a month ago, 2 months ago, depending on when it happened, that this was, you know, you guys agreed as a team and you signed on with this, you signed the contract, so to speak. And those are great ways to, put that onus on your team that this is their journey. I mean, you've had, you've had 17 different journeys with your Lane Tech teams. I had 18 different journeys as a head coach. But those kids only get anywhere from one at the most to four of these journeys. So what are you going to do with it? And it's your journey. I can help guide you because of the journeys I've been on, but it's better if you guys kind of find your own way as well. And, and I think that's it's a great way for kids to, it's a great way to lead your young men and young women in that regard.
I love it. And then like you said, you don't, I think that's a big thing that I'm learning as I get older. Like when we violate these, you know, the way we're going to live, the covenant, the contract, whatever, like it's not, it doesn't have to be fire and brimstone.
Correct.
It's like, you know, it's almost like, hey, here's what you did. Here's the consequences because you violated. And it's almost like the, you know, I always talk about it too. Like if you're, you know, when my mom and dad were upset with me, when I felt like I let them down, that was a million times worse than any kind of hooting or hollering or screaming or punishment. Right.
Yep.
And it's like, if you care about it, it's going to show. And clearly your kids cared about it. I think our kids care about it. If you violate this contract, there are consequences. That's really good. And like the pen to the paper, the signing,
yes.
it, right?
Yes. That's, and we made a big deal out of that. It was it was a big thing, and I kind of had this little pre-rap speech, but you know it varied from year to year. But we made a big deal out of it. And one of the final things that I would say to the kids, and I truly meant it: if you don't think you can sign on with this, that's cool. You don't have to be here. But this is a lesson in life that you're giving. Not me, your word, but you look around at all your classmates and all your teammates. You're giving them your word that this is what we're going to do this year. This is how we're going to this is how we're going to practice. This is how we're going to treat each other all the way down the line. And that's a powerful thing. You can have 200 page player document, all this other stuff, and I've got. You know, obviously, I've got my own paperwork and things like that, but just putting that pen to paper and everybody literally signing on, you know, as Benjamin Franklin said after they signed the Declaration of Independence, you know, somebody said, we better hang together. And he said, yes, if we don't hang together, we will hang separately. And,
that's right.
And you know, it's kind of the, you know, it's that same thing. You know, we've got to come together as a group, and it's a great way to do it, you know, and I really enjoyed that process.
That's, I might be stealing some of that, man. That's really good. And just being a person of your word, like be someone who means what they say and, you know, says what they mean. And it's unfortunately, it's getting lost more and more. I can't even tell you the transfer portal in high school basketball in Chicago right now. And I don't mean to go off on a tangent about that, but like, you know, you say you're going to be kids. It's a business now. You can make NIL money. I get all that. Sometimes it's not a bad situation. You got to move on. I get it. But sometimes you also got to step up and own your word. And I think there's somewhere in the middle. We got to figure it out. But anyway, we digress.
Yeah. And we have digressed to the end of this awesome conversation.
Yeah.
Nick Legalbo, if they want to know more about you, if they want to search you, if folks want to search you out after listening to this, where can they find stuff about you and stuff about Lane Tech?
For sure. So my social handles for Twitter are X, at Coach Legalbo, LOGALBO. And then our basketball program is at Lane Tech Hoops. So a lot of stuff going on there. One of my assistants runs that and does a great job, but it's all stuff about a program. My Instagram is Legalbo11, but that's on private. It has to be on private because I'm a teacher and that's kind of the policy of the district.
Sure.
But if it's a basketball person, I'll usually accept that. If we want to check in with basketball stuff and family stuff. And then my email, I have a school email that I check for basketball related stuff, but I also have a personal one, which if we're just talking hoops and you're someone who's outside of Chicago specifically, just my name, Nick Legalbo at gmail.com. I'd love to talk hoops.
Simple enough.
Yep.
Nick, this hour and 10 minutes has flown by. It's been a blast. Yeah. I knew we were going to have a lot of fun, but I knew we were going to get a lot of great stuff out there for the listeners. It's man, you know, you go to Snow Valley, you hope you survive. One of the great things has been meeting a lot of the people that I've met. And man, I'm so lucky that we decided to sit across from that table this summer, and it's been great getting to know you over the last couple of months, and I'm really looking forward to getting to know you further down the line here, man. It's been awesome.
Oh, everything you said, spot on. Agreed, Mart. I think we're going to have a lasting friendship and some more Snow Valley summers for sure. And maybe a Pearl Jam at Wrigley Field one summer. You never know.
That would be awesome. At the very least, we'll sit out in the right field bleachers and have a hot dog and a beverage and watch the Cubs get drilled by the Brewers or something like that. So.
Hopefully not. Hopefully we figure it out.
Hopefully we figure it out here at some point. Yeah. So, all right, hold the line here a second, Nick. Nick Legalbo, head boys basketball coach at Lane Tech High School in Chicago, USA basketball. A lot of great stuff. A lot of good things. I hope you enjoyed. We're just trying to have some fun with that office thing. I hope folks enjoyed it and saw it for what it was, with us just having a good time and being a little silly. Sometimes you got to be a little bit silly. So we had a great time with that. We want to thank our founding sponsor, Cosette Chiropractic. Follow us on Twitter at A Pen and a Napkin. Download, rate, review. Like I said, give us 5 stars. Check this out. Email me, apenandanapkin@gmail.com, if you have any questions, comments, suggestions, or ideas. Tony and I, we got the episode 100 of the coaching staff coming up here in a couple of weeks. We're looking for ideas. You know, send us questions, anything that you might have there. Go check out apenandanapkin.com. I got so much stuff going on, I don't even have enough time to say it. You know, buy the book here in a few weeks. Substack, the opening tip, but it's all good stuff. You know, I never want to put anything out there that's not going to be positive for people. I'm not putting crap out there just to have stuff. It's stuff that if I were a basketball coach, I would want to take a look at it. So I hope you folks understand that. So great conversation tonight. Appreciate Nick's time. He's really busy. He's got a lot of stuff going on, so I really appreciate that. Coaches, as always, let's be sure to own our craft one day at a time.